Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea. This is the Cuckoo's Nest Broadcasting System presenting the Jerry Roach Show. Well, we got one of those crazy punks with us, Arab, from the famous Arab and the Suburban Turbans, now of Love Canal, but a guy that was there from the beginning, and if he wasn't in the band, he was the roadie, and he knows where all the bodies are buried, and he kind of stole the show at my movie when we interviewed him. I think he was the only one of the guys that wasn't box office that made the cut.
Yeah, huh? I know, because I never played there in a band. I worked there for some bands, and I actually did sound for you, like on the very tail end. I did sound there. A handful of times. Yeah, and I can't remember the sound guy's name.
Mark Soden, maybe.
Was it Mark?
Yeah,
yeah.
But he was in the New Beams.
That's right. That's right. Okay. I used to rent a warehouse next to Rod Therese. And Rod Therese was in the New Beams as well.
Oh, he was?
Or no, maybe it was the New Beams used to practice at Rod Therese's place.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Yeah, wow. The New Beams were the band that used to set up in laundromats.
Yep.
Which was really, I thought...
They were awesome.
Way ahead of everybody.
You know what? Nobody remembers the New Beams.
No,
you know,
well, I mean, they weren't really hardcore punk. They were just
they were kind
artists.
Of more art.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, was Jeff Kay in the New Beams?
All I know is those two guys. I don't remember anybody else, so he might have been. You know, just know T.L. Airy, the main guy, and Mark Soden.
Yeah, there's a connection somewhere along the line there. But yeah, they were good. I used to see them all the time.
But they used to do like a jewel robbery when they went into the laundromats. They'd have a guy on the clock. You know, I figured we can get away with a half an hour before the cops come. And everybody'd pitch in. They'd set up, play, and everybody'd pitch in, tear down, and they'd be gone before the cops got there. That was brilliant.
Oh, that is
so
funny.
We wrote a scene like that into the movie, only it's TSOL. And they're in the laundromat down the street.
Uh-huh.
And I had the way I wrote it was I had my big band broke up, Squeeze, that brought all the people. And all of a sudden I can't get arrested. And I'm sitting there working the door myself, and there's nobody in there, some band playing a big empty room. And I hear this racket down the street, and it's 100 kids at the damn laundromat, you know, and I'm going, what am I doing? I can't get arrested. There's 100 kids in the laundromat. So, you know, I have Pat Brown be the manager of the band, you know, so, and he's always bugging me for a gig, you know, like Jim Trash was, but actually it's going to be Pat Brown. And I'm going, yeah, get away. Call back when you're 21 or whatever. And just, but then I realized, wow, I see Pat Brown was on the clock 5 minutes, you know.
You know what's so funny? There was like a whole other scene, a whole other party at the laundromat while shit was happening at the Cuckoo's Nest, you know. And it'd be funny because, you know, you go by there and it's like, where do I want to go? You know, I don't got any money to go into the nest, so I'll just go down and party at the laundromat, you know, with all my friends.
Yeah, well, of course, it was just once. I mean, you know, they would hit different places, different laundromats, and... And they never did the same one twice, evidently, but just like a bunch of bank robbers.
That's funny you bring that up because, you know, that's a band I haven't heard that in, you know,
well, I think the main guy died and everything, and I don't really think they ever did much, but they were innovative. I think they were the first band to have a drum machine. And of course, they called the guy Ricky, and they would make up things about Ricky, which I think refers to Ricky Ricardo. Remember his little Ricky, the drummer, and Lucy.
Oh, that's funny, yeah.
The original. I think that's where they might have got it from.
That's going pretty far back for Orange County punk rock there. I mean, they were a punk rock band, you know, but back then, you know, if you weren't a long haired,
they were kind of arty.
Rock band,
whatever,
yeah.
You know,
they're more on the other side of the spectrum of, you know, that.
Well, in the beginning, everybody, there wasn't any code or anything. There was no template.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it was great because people went all different directions and anything could happen, you know. It was like a... But that was also a point I'd like to make, too, is that the thing about because we didn't know what was going to happen, there was the fear of the unknown where anything could happen. You never knew what, you know, like Jack showing up with everybody in whiteface.
You know what, like, I want to know, and I'm going to ask you the question. I'm going to be the interviewee here. Who was the first punk band that you booked? Do you remember?
Well, I did a show for... I was curious about it, and I heard about The Mask being closed down. Well, they only had one entrance. I mean, give me a break. What kind of bar? They get all the credit for the magic punk club in L.A. Only had one entrance. Well, they open a week? I mean, it was like a rehearsal space. But as soon as the people find out you're open, well, wait a minute, you can't have one entrance in a basement.
Yeah.
tragedy
waiting to happen, huh?
But I was reading how they were closing him, so I thought, well, maybe I'll do a benefit for him, and I'll find out what this, you know, bring the band to Mohammed rather than Mohammed to the mountain, you know. So I bring the mountain to Mohammed. So I did a benefit for Brendan, and he brought down four bands, which was Spike's band, the Controllers.
Controllers, yeah.
It's funny because my sons know his son, Adam. They knew him in Laguna and Skate World and Graffiti and all that. Mm-hmm. And then another one was Alice Bag and the Bags, and I think the Screws, or it wasn't the Screws. It was
the Gears.
No, it wasn't the Gears. I think it was something like the Screws.
Oh yeah, maybe the Screamers.
No, it wasn't the Screamers. And then somebody called Steeman Freeman, who was come and gone. I guess he was a saxophone player that was never heard from again. And I can't think of that third band at the moment, but that was the benefit for the mask. And basically, that was the first punk show in Orange County.
What was that, like 78?
77, I think.
77?
I'm pretty sure. And then from there, I think I booked the Crowd as the first, you know, because he was always bugging me for a gig. And I thought, well, I'll give it a try. Uh-huh. And, you know, give him a Sunday night or something. It's full. So, hey, get the, you know, but in the movie, I do it that other way with,
yeah,
you know, seeing the laundromat packed, but yeah, and that's how it started. And you know, the way that the Slam started was Jim Trash, you know, he was doing the Worm and stuff, and you know, he'd flop around with bouncers, get him and throw him out, and then they'd have another the next week. They did it, then they started pushing each other around, and we threw him out for that. And I know they went back to school and said, this week, everybody do it. They can't stop all. And it happened that quick. All of a sudden, the whole, you know, it's just like that quick. It's like, well, I can't throw them all out. It might have been 2 or 3 weeks. But all of a sudden, everyone was doing it. And then we'll try to contain it, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't take any credit, but evidently it did happen there. I tried to stop it, but it got away from me.
Yeah, contain it in a pit.
Yeah. It was kind of a pit, though. You know how it was high on the sides?
Yeah.
You know,
you know, it's so funny. I hate the term moshing. You know, it's no.
Where'd they come up with that?
It's a New York thing. It's like this. It's like a Anthrax, and nothing against those bands, you know, if that's what you're into. But Anthrax and, you know, those speed metal bands from New York, and they came up with this thing, moshing, and it's like, okay,
that's
moshing
is
what hippies do. Punks do not mosh. Punks slam,
you
know, or they worm or they pogo, but they don't mosh, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but and of course, you know, they're all going around in circles now, but they used to just come from all sides and slam into each other. But speaking of the old days, let's play something by the Crowd. How about Modern Machine?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Absolutely.
Okay, that was the Crowd. There were a lot of bands in those old days that didn't get famous, you know, like Mike's band, M.I.A. They really didn't have that much. They weren't that well known, were they? They were.
You know what? I mean, MI actually had great success. You know, they traveled the U.S. quite a bit, and you know, they put out some great albums. They were on Alternative Tentacles, Jello Biafra's label. Oh, that's why label.
Jello came down for a benefit.
Yeah,
for him.
Jello came down from that benefit that we had
at the Detroit
when Mike passed away at the Detroit. Yeah, that's right. And you guys were hanging out backstage. That was awesome seeing you guys together. And you know, so but I guess what you'd say is, you know, MIA was kind of maybe like a B band. You know, I hate to say that and put them in a categorize them or anything like that. But yeah, they were never like, you know, they headlined. You know, their own shows, but, you know, I guess being from Orange County, they weren't the Adolescents or TSOL.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, they played the Cuckoo's Nest a lot, though. I remember they were always, you know, I get them to open or play second, and they would bring enough people that they would help the gig, you know.
They were a great band. I love those guys. You know, I mean, they transplanted. And it was such a tragic story. I guess maybe we can talk about that since we're talking about MIA.
Yeah, I just heard that something happened in Chicago, and they don't know.
You know... They can, I guess, to make a long story short, the band came from Las Vegas. Mike was the drummer originally, and they were called The Swell. And they changed to MIA. I don't know if it happened before they came from Vegas out to Newport, or when they got to Newport, they changed the name to MIA. But their original singer, Todd Sampson, he stayed in Vegas. And when Mike passed away, which, you know, I've heard so many different stories of how he died, but basically he fell and hit his head out in the parking lot and died, you know.
Yeah.
But the tragedy is then Todd Sampson came and sang all these benefit shows, and then they started playing a few other shows and as MIA, and then Todd literally died on stage in Vegas.
Oh God.
A couple of years ago, and they tried to get him to the hospital, and he just, I think, died on the way. And it was just, you know, I don't know if it was heat exhaustion or a combination of several things, probably. But I mean, what a tragedy for those guys, you know. And I've played in a band with Nick and Paul, the original guitar player and bass player, and you know, it's just such a bummer. Love those guys. Hopefully we can play an MIA song today.
Yeah, let's play. Something by MIA. How about turning to what you hate?
Oh, turning into
what you hate.
Yeah, turning into what you hate. Kind of reminds me of all my liberal friends. Turning into what they hate.
Okay, that was MIA, Mike Conley's band, and yeah, rest in peace, Mike. He was a nice kid. Sorry to hear that happen to him. I guess his wife is still running that little club they have, right?
Yeah, the Avalon Bar.
Yeah,
and she's kept it going, and it's great. They got some great bands that come in and play through there, and you know, Mike built that place, and you know, it was just a little dump. I think it was like a little Mexican bar or something. For years.
Yeah, a little dive bar.
Yeah, just a little dive bar off of 19th Street in Placentia. And he built that place, and he had a great eye for architecture. In fact, you should see his house. His house is beautiful. Yeah. And I think, I'm pretty sure Sid still lives in the house with the girls.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, God bless them.
But remembering those days, like you said, so we were talking earlier, and you said when TSOL took over, that's when it really kicked in. And I think that's when X, I think John Doe from X said that punk rock ended with when TSOL became a band. And actually, it was just really, really beginning, I think, or really hitting its stride.
Yeah.
Because I remember when everyone talked about Vicious Circle and, oh, there's this new band, TSOL, and there was all this excitement about them. And right away, they were like...
It got violent, you know? I mean, it was scary. And, you know, in those early days, I was a Ramones fan. I seen the Ramones in 76. They had played the Golden Bear, and I didn't go. But the next day, they played this little street fair in Huntington Beach called the Festa Fair.
Uh-huh.
And, they played out in a dirt field, and I seen them. And, I just thought there were these dirty bikers up on stage, you know, and I really paid no attention. I was just trying to chase chicks and get loaded and find somebody to buy me some beer at 15 years old. But then a few months later, they played the Golden West Ballroom in Norwalk. And I went to go see Van Halen, who was coincidentally opening for the Ramones that night. I had no idea who the Ramones were at that time. It was, early 77. And so I go to see Van Halen, and at the end of the night, the Ramones come out, and I'm like, hey, there's those dirty bikers that played in Huntington Beach. And that night, I went out and got a leather jacket the next day. I was like an overnight punk rock sensation, but I still had long hair. You know, I was a surfer, and the Ramones had long hair. I didn't know you had to have short hair to be a punker. But, you know, once the whole Vicious Circle thing came, and, you know, then TSOL thereafter, and, man, I got violent. I was fortunate, you know, I was a skater, surfer, and, you know, grew up in Huntington with all those guys, and, you know, all my friends would go see them.
So you were on the inside. You didn't have to
worry. Yeah, I got lucky because I was just a little runt, man, and I was lucky I didn't get beat up.
Yeah, those were, imagine me trying to deal with them going, what? You know, it was a big, I was, you know, I'm trying to figure out what happened, you know, where are the bell bottoms? Where's the long hair? What is this torn clothes business?
you know what? If your insurance agent ever came into the club when there was a punk gig going on,
we never had insurance.
No way. No, fuck. How did you do that, man?
Well, we figured if we had a big case and they got $1 million, oh, take the club. You know, you can have it.
Yeah, you could have it. You can't do that nowadays.
If the landlord found out, he would have made us get it because in the lease we were supposed to have insurance.
But who owned that building back then?
Well, it was. Let me think about that.
Did the same guy own Zuby's and?
Larry Smith was my partner, landlord, and he had an opportunity to buy the whole property and passed on it. So Zuby bought the whole property. So actually Zuby owned the Cuckoo's Nest, but my friend had the master lease. And so I leased from him and he leased from Zuby.
Oh.
But Zuby didn't make any money.
So as much as Zuby's hated you, there was nothing he could do about
huh? No, because it was all, you know, and as soon as my lease ran out, then he could kick me out. But we had a, you know, like 2 10-year terms or something.
Yeah. The history of those two little, the two Quonset huts there are just amazing, you know, that they were from the war.
It used to be a Hofbräu, something Hofbräu, the Zuby's. Uh-huh. And the Cuckoo's Nest was the Costa Mesa Playhouse. It was like a place where they put on plays at one time, I guess. But it was Finnegan's, which was a famous hippie place.
Yeah, Finnegan's Rainbow.
Yeah.
Right? And where was the Sunshine Meat and Liquor?
Oh, that was up in Anaheim.
That was Anaheim.
That was
okay.
By Disneyland.
Yeah.
But I remember I owned a bar in Newport called the Bacchus House.
Oh,
it was right across from it was where the Ski Mart was.
Yeah, you own that?
Yeah, that was my first place. That's where I booked Bo Diddley. That was
wow.
I booked Bo Diddley there and Albert Collins and
I got a great Bo Diddley story.
Oh yeah.
yeah, Ron Emery. Ron Emery built this Gretsch guitar. It was a Gretsch Bo Diddley model, you know, a square one, rectangle or whatever. And it was a beautiful guitar. It had a Gretsch neck and Ron built the body. And so he goes up to see Bo Diddley, I think it was at the Music Machine up in L.A. one night, and shows it to Bo and gets Bo to autograph it. And they chatted, you know, and, you know, talk guitars and music and whatnot. And so years later, T.S. Wells playing up at the I-Beam in San Francisco. And Bo Diddley's playing like an earlier matinee show. And so me and Ron go to the show, and we're sitting right, standing right in the front of Bo while he's playing, and he does this one song, and I think it's Bo Diddley, but he does this thing where he talks about all the great black musicians that have passed away, and he goes, "You got yourself your Jimi Hendrix and your James Brown, and you know you're this and you're that," and he looks right at Ron and he goes, "And you got yourself a Bo Diddley," and like he totally remembered Ron, you know, and it was like me and Ron looked at each other and we're like little kids, like wow.
Well, I was really stoked too to book him. I mean, $500. Fuck. That was 1970, but yeah, he was. Yeah, he was said he was moving because he thought California was going to go into the ocean. He got out of town.
Wow!
Remember that? Well, you probably don't remember. Oh, yeah, no, way I back do. When there was that thing, hey, old California.
I remember when they said that the world was going to freeze over 30 years ago. Oh, you remember? And that didn't happen. You know, now it's going to warm yeah. over and
right. Know. The threat of, and you know, you hear this baloney too about and you know, I don't think that anything's going to go underwater just because the ice cap melt isn't going to, you know, put Newport underwater. Yeah. I just can't see it, you know.
You know what? It's a big world we live in, and I can't see the
point. And as if we're going to do anything about it. It's a big world. Like, oh, we're going to stop our carbon emissions. Well, what about China? Building these coal plants it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, you know what, and I think, you know, I guess now that we're talking politics, it's such a tragedy because they're coal, there's clean coal, you know, and it's a good resource, it's a good natural resource, and we have a shitload of it, and the administration has basically just killed the coal industry in this country right now, and you know, people, like I'm a union man, I'm a union stagehand, and my union friends, you know, pro-union, and you know, I'm very pro-union, I'm pro for my, you know, I'm pro-business,
sure.
too, you know, because without business, I don't have a job, you know, and I recognize that, and I recognize that, you know, somebody's going to have to make some money, and so, you know, industry's going to make money, big corporations are going to make money, but they're also creating jobs for the rest of us, and you can't put the cart before the horse and say that, oh, well, without us, they wouldn't have a business. It's like, no, it's their capital. It's their investment that started it.
Do you remember when he came up with that thing? Well, we built the road that they have to drive on that road to get to your business. Oh, give me a break.
Yeah.
You didn't build that business. I mean, anybody that ever built their own business and heard that, it's like, what do you mean? I mean, you know, guys that own their own businesses work harder than anybody.
Yeah, another Ron Emery story. Ron Emery bought a house in Iowa from a guy. This guy was like in his 90s, I think. His father owned the construction company that is known to have paved America. They were the construction company that paved the interstates. And that wasn't government. They might have been government contracts, but
somebody paid for it, not the government.
Yeah, somebody paid for it. Somebody got taxes. It's our taxes that paid for it.
It's like,
you know, but yeah, the coal industry, it's a bummer because, and back to the union thing, look how many union members are put out of work because of what Obama's done to the coal industry, you know, and it's what a tragedy that is.
Yeah, it's really amazing that he got reelected, but oh well.
Yeah, we'll play some more music.
Yeah, 3 more years. How about something by? Let me think back then. How about JFA? There's another band.
Yeah,
that is pretty cool. Jody Foster's Army, by the way, in case anybody isn't hip to that. But Jody Foster didn't like the idea that they were one of the Army of Hinckleys.
One of my favorite bands from Phoenix, Arizona. Originally, actually, they were kind of part Huntington Beach, part Phoenix. Uh-huh. And they finally transplanted. You know, they've all been out here in Huntington Beach longer than they were in Arizona.
So anyway, she sued him, said, "You can't use my name. I don't want to hear this Jody Foster's Army business." So they changed it to JFA, which is so punk. Just just love it. And here's a tune by them called, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, they were probably the originators, them and the Big Boys from Texas, the originators of skate rock.
Oh, really? I was thinking the Stains were from Texas, too.
Stains. Which turned into MDC or whatever turned into. Yeah. But, yeah, just, you know, JFA, the original skate rock band.
Well, here they are doing Road Rage.
I think everybody suffers from a little road rage from time to time. Traffic must move to
Okay, that was JFA, and you know, we should do a couple of your tunes, Eric, while we're working on it. You've got a couple of them here I want to get in. Eric's band's Love Canal, and they've been playing for 30 years, and they, I don't know, on and off, but he kept the band together. They're still playing, and here's a tune called Leave Me Alone.
Why don't you just make some?
I'm just going to make them on my list with the original logo.
With the original logo, you know.
Just we're talking about simple. Cuckoo's Nest shirts, and why didn't I do that? Because I'm stupid. But I guess I'm going to maybe now start making them. So watch out, boys and girls. Except boys and girls, I don't know if they're listening. It's all the old folks.
Are we back on again? You know what? Club shirts are happening. I just... you know, our good friend Frank Ruffino from China White passed away recently, and his wife had posted a photo of him wearing the 930 Club in Washington, D.C., which is a famous club that's like, you know, the Roxy or Whiskey of Washington, D.C. You know, I always said that the Cuckoo's Nest was our Roxy or Whiskey or our CBGBs, you know, that's the Cuckoo's Nest was that for us. But so I had commented about... Frank wearing the shirt and this picture that she posted on Facebook, and probably a lot of people don't know what the 930 is. And so she called me up the day after the funeral, or maybe I called her to say hi because I couldn't make the funeral, I had to work. And she said, hey, I'm giving away a bunch of Frank's clothes, and you know, just giving away shirts to people I thought would appreciate it. And she goes, would you like that 930 shirt? And I was just like, oh man, I almost cried when she told me that. And I went over to the house and she gave it to me. And I can't wait to wear it, you know, because Frank was one of my heroes as a guitar player.
Yeah, I'm glad I got to say goodbye to him. I went to that benefit at the Galaxy or whatever they call it.
Yeah, the observatory.
Yeah.
You know what? And can I just say...
He was very happy sitting there.
Yeah.
Big smile on his face.
I was stoked that you got to make it. And you know what? That goes full circle all the way back to what you did for Brendan, doing the benefit for him. I just want to publicly thank the observatory for, because they basically just said,
they let you have their
you
own.
Guys come in and do whatever you want to do. You take the door, we'll take the bar, plain and simple. And
it's pretty nice, huh?
We had a very good night. Yeah, because you know what? There's a lot of full. Clubs. There's a lot of clubs that, you know, they'll say, oh, yeah, for $2,000, you can rent the club. And actually, with the old owner, Gary Folgner, that owned the Galaxy, which, you know, I've worked with a lot of bands that came through his clubs over the years and stuff. But I tried to do a benefit there one time, and they told me it was going to cost $5,000 to rent the club to do a benefit. Huh. And I'm like, you know, I understand, you know, you got to make a living, and, you know, you don't do this for free.
30 days a month.
Yeah, but, you know, come on. And, you know, I don't think that was so much Gary's policy as the people that were actually running the club, because he wasn't really involved in day-to-day operations.
Yeah, I never really knew him very well. He did me a favor, though, one time. My son wanted to see Ziggy Marley, and it was sold out, and he made sure that he, you know, could get a ticket. I didn't ask for a free one. I just wanted to make sure he could buy one. Uh-huh. And he arranged that for me. So that's my only interaction with him.
You know what? I look at there's a handful of guys that I really admire here in Orange County as promoters, you being one of them.
And
it's funny because I didn't know about the Bo Diddley story. I didn't know you went that far back. You're fucking old.
Well, that was 1970.
You're fucking
was
old.
When we founded the Bacchus House.
That
was that was my first bar.
That's amazing. But also Gary Folgner, he's been keeping the music alive here in Orange County for many years. And also,
well, he took over for the Golden Bear when the Golden Bear went south.
Yeah,
you know, he just stepped right in and booked those bands, or he became the new Golden Bear. Yeah.
And also J.A. Schultz. Do you remember J.A. Schultz? Joe Schultz.
Joe Schultz. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's still around. Somebody just told me that he's
booking. I heard Johnny died, the younger one.
Yeah, his son. Was that his son?
No, that was his brother.
His little brother.
And his brother and his dad ran the Woodstock next door to me.
Yeah. But you know what? You three, and along with also Gary Tovar of Golden
Tovar, Voice. He's the one that started paying the punks the money they were worth.
Exactly. You know,
which I give him credit for, but, you know, he did well with it.
Gary?
I mean, he's in a bigger room. You can pay him more, you know, if you got, you know, 2,000 people coming,
you know,
instead of 200.
I tell you, the thing about Gary is, and he always says about what happened to you, was like how you brought up how Gary Folgner and the Coach House picked up all the Golden Bears acts. Yeah. You know, as soon as the Cuckoo's Nest closed, Gary Tovar seen that and jumped on it and started booking the bands. You know?
Why didn't I do that? I was just...
Yeah, I think you were just over it.
Yeah, I was.
Time, you know?
But it was... Yeah, he saw the opportunity, and I'm more power to him. I like Gary.
I love Gary. He's a great guy. I've done business with him and several different things.
Well, let's play another one of your tunes here. How about Nervous Breakdown?
Go
ahead.
Arab and the Suburban Turbans,
right.
Doing Black Flag's Nervous Breakdown, and it's kind of like a little lounge version.
So your own version.
Hope you enjoy it.
A little lounge lizard. Here we go, Nervous Breakdown.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've been, you know, I've been really fortunate to work with some great bands over the years. I kind of got my career started touring with bands with the Standells from the 60s. They had reformed in the 80s, and they were the New Standells. And Dick Dodd.
Dickie Dodd.
Yeah, sure. You know Dickie,
He's from around here. He was a Mouseketeer, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a Mouseketeer.
Yeah.
And what's a great story about that was he tried out for the Mouseketeers with like 6,000 other kids back in the 50s. And he got the gig. And, you know, he did the Mouseketeers and made a buttload of money as a little kid. And, you know, started doing drugs. And then they started the Standells. And, you know, he pissed it all away and lost it all. And he got, a really bad car accident in the 90s. But yeah, the first band I ever really worked with, was the Standells, and then, the Vandals. I was good friends with Jan. We went to elementary school together since like fourth grade and, started working for the Vandals and that kind of, I knew Ron and Mike, Ron Emery and Mike Roach from TSOL and started working for TSOL. And, I've toured with the Circle Jerks, the Dickies, Thelonious Monster, the Damned, did the Damned reunion tour.
Wow, you must have seen some shit, huh?
Did the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I got a great Chili Peppers story for you, Madonna. We went to, we were in Europe for like 30 days or so, and we flew back to New York to film Saturday Night Live. And so we're sitting in the dressing room the day we're filming the show, and Madonna comes walking down the hallway, and I'm sitting on the arm of the couch, and I see her coming, and I'm like, hey, here comes Madonna. And also she just beelines right into our dressing room, and she goes, I got just one request. And so I look up at her and I go, what, you want to sing a duet with me? And she goes, yeah, how'd you know? And she sits on my lap for like 10 minutes.
Really?
Yeah. And like kisses me on the cheek and she's all rubbing up and rubbing all over me. And she's like got peach fuzz hair. Like she needs to shave.
You know? Like an old woman thing.
Yeah. Just like this Italian woman, furry face, you know? But she was a sweetheart. But the whole time for 10, 15 minutes, she's sitting on my lap hitting on Anthony, you know, the singer of the Peppers.
Oh yeah.
And then they started dating just thereafter.
But remember that she was the first one to take, you know, the glam punk fashion and make it cool.
She did.
You know, that movie Desperately Seeking Sue, you know, she was like the punk rocker, you know, and she Madonna'd up the punk look, but made it very fashionable. And I think it was a huge, when she did that, I think that made, you know, punk legitimate kind of almost.
You know, what's so funny is all of a sudden we didn't get our pictures taken by the police anymore, you know, because now we're legitimate because Madonna does it, you know, going back to what.
Can you imagine?
I know.
That's because they didn't know what's going on. We got to figure this out. What's going on? You know, like what happened? Why are they doing this?
Yeah. Rebellious kids.
They were worried about me. A friend of mine got arrested one night and he was telling them, like, I know Jerry Roach. I was like, they're going to let him go because, you know.
Probably going to throw you in jail for it.
And one of the cops said, yeah, we're worried about that guy. If he got those punks organized, that would be a big force that would, you know. Well, they aren't going to organize behind me because I'm the bad guy. I'm the authority guy, you know, the guy with the, what is it with the mallet, you know, three blind mice on the freeway, the guy with the,
yeah, yeah.
That's me. I'm the guy with the mallet.
Truly Nolan guy. The exterminator.
But eventually, you know, we all got on the same page, but it took a while. But that's because I was from a different world, you know. But I did see this energy, and it reminded me of the dawn of the hippies when everyone was together, you know, just for that brief moment when there was like our thing, you know, before it got, you know, the template, and before everyone knew, well, you want to be this kind of punk, you dress like this, or you know. But it was like in the beginning, that energy of this is our thing, we can do wherever we went, and that was exciting. I was drawn to that.
And you know what? And it's such a bummer that it kind of went in, like, you know, within punk, there's so many different subsects or genres within the genre, you
right?
know? And nowadays, like, there's. Like, I don't even understand it all, you know? I mean, first it was like you just had, like the punks that were kind of like the artists, you know, that, like the hippies had the artist side, you know? And then those artists kind of like went avant-garde and turned it in. That's kind of like where the punk thing came, you know? And then all of a sudden it split from there and got violent with the skinheads, you know?
Right.
And you had the oi thing and then all of a sudden it just went even further when the whole speed metal thing came in you know, just branched off and went so many different directions. But you know what, for me, if it's got a guitar, you know, and drums and, you know, it's got a beat, I like it all. I like all music. I'm not really into rap or hip hop, but I love, yeah, rock. I love rock and roll. You know, I mean, and punk is just a sped up version of rock and roll.
Well, my theory is it was the end of rock and roll. You know, I mean, like it started here and it ended here, and now you got it. You can mix and match, do whatever kind of rock and roll, but that's it.
Yeah.
I don't think that. You know, to me, it was like deconstruction almost. You know, like, yeah, remember exactly. The first thing was the early punk bands where you didn't have to know how to play to be in a punk band.
Yeah.
Remember that? And they just get there and make noise. And, well, that was different, you know. Something, but, yeah, I can't see, you know, it's cyclically, we're getting to a point now. It's been, what, 30 years or so. It's ready for something new to happen.
Yeah, but you know what? I tell you, you got to hand it to all the old bands. You know, the Ramones would still be playing today if those guys were still alive. In fact, CJ Ramone, the bass player that played with him the last 10 years, he's playing. He does this thing as CJ Ramone, and he does like, it's kind of like a Ramones tribute. But
Dan
it's like,
Root
fuck.
Plays with him, I think.
Yeah, Dan Root and Steve Soto play with him.
Yeah, it was Soto too. Oh,
yeah, cool. And I just did like and actually David Hidalgo from the drummer of the Social Distortion played drums with him. Huh. I just did like a little 3 or 4 date stint with him, and they were awesome, man. But huh. I mean, you look at like, I mean, speaking of Soto, you know, there's a man that's played in so
been around
fucking
for a long
bands,
time, yeah.
You know, but you know, Agent Orange, Adolescence, TSOL, The Vandals.
He wasn't in TSOL.
Middle Class just played. No, he wasn't in it, but I'm just talking about all
the
bands
he was in.
You know, no, I'm just talking about all those bands from Orange County.
Right.
That, you know.
But he was in Agent Orange in the Adolescence.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, all those bands like Middle Class just played it recently.
Yeah.
But, you know, those
Mike
kids,
Adda and Mike.
All these guys that like are in their 50s now, and I'm 52, but you know, still playing and still viable. You know, they're still selling out, you know, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 seat venues, and here they are, you know, in their 50s, and you know, whoever thought the Stones would be rocking when they're pushing their 70s,
yeah.
You know, and yeah. Fuck, they still rock, man.
Well, I mean, you know, just like musicians, you get better all the time. You know, like those old flamenco players, you know, they're 80 years old and they're still like, you know, like Segovia. And,
yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's something to say about, they just get better in a certain way. But the creativity, you know, like when they were young was when they had all those great tunes.
Yeah.
Know?
And you know what? They're still living off, you know.
The war, you know, songs. They got like 12 big, huge hits they
yeah,
play.
But I still love those songs, you know. I mean,
it's great to hear them live because it's always different, you know.
Yeah.
So basically, all the songs we've been playing are songs that are local Huntington Beach bands that you've played with, but we haven't done TSOL yet. So let's play one by them. What do you want to play by them, Eric?
You know what? Let's play. I love Man and Machine. Let's listen to Man and Machine.
Okay, here it is. Man and Machine, TSOL. Yeah, that was TSOL, Man and Machine.
And one of my favorite songs, one of my favorite bands. I've, today it was, thanks for letting me come in and play some of the bands from Huntington Beach that I've been fortunate to play or to work with.
Well, my pleasure. I'm glad you came in. Thank you.
Yeah, and it's great to have friends that you know, it have invited me to go on tour with them and work for them over the years, and T.S. Will being one of my favorites. I love those guys.
Yeah, they're the most fun, I think. I don't know why. Something about them.
You know what? It's just you never know what's going to happen, you know? And with Jack. And, you know, I worked with both bands when Joe was in the band and with Jack. And, you know, both great bands. You know, Ron and Roach, great songwriters.
Yeah, Ron is, I think he's, I mean, Mike Roach told me one time it's all him. He goes.
Ron's a great guitar player. But he's
like the center of the creative for this, you know, writing, I guess.
Ron can write a hook, you know.
He's and like, Jack's an unbelievable wordsmith.
I mean, he's not like a Steve Vai guitar player, but he's more like a B.B. King where it's just one note, where he gets so much out of one note, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like that less is more thing, you know. So, and right. he kind of taught me how to play guitar too. So I got a soft spot for T.S. Will. So thanks for letting me come in and play some of my favorite bands from my hometown.
Well, today. My pleasure. Once again, thank you. And I want to thank my producer, Tom Knees, for putting this all together for us. And I guess that wraps us up. We're going to play one more tune by Love Canal.
Let's play Love Canal soon. How about Suicide Train?
Suicide Train it is. We're going out with that. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week. And don't forget to buy my movie, Clockwork Orange County, at Amazon. Good night, all.
Good night.
Mrs. America and all the ships at sea. This is the Cuckoo's Nest Broadcasting System presenting the Jerry Roach Show.